For KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Horton. This is Anti-War Radio. All right, y'all, welcome to the show. Appreciate you tuning in. It's Anti-War Radio here every Friday on KPFK from 6:30 to 7 o'clock. Of course, we're on 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, and 99.5 in Ridgecrest, China Lake, as well as streaming live around the world at kpfk.org. Okay, so now to Kelly B. Vlahos. She writes for antiwar.com as a regular columnist and also for the American Conservative magazine. She also does freelance reporting for numerous publications in Washington, D.C., and as I said, she's the author of the cover story of the April issue of the American Conservative magazine, Poison Generation. For Rack's children, the war is not over. Welcome to the show, Kelly. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here, and this is a very hard-hitting piece there in the American Conservative magazine, which is the flagship magazine of the anti-war right in this country. And oftentimes it's worth reading in depth, but this article was really great and especially timely since it's now the 8th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. And primarily this article is concerned with the pollution of various kinds and the disastrous effects that this pollution has had for the people of Iraq. So that I think, as you even say in the piece, even though the American people would prefer to just pretend the Iraq War is ancient history or something, it's still going on for the people there. Can you tell us a little bit about the consequences and maybe some of the likely causes that we're talking about here?
Sure. I mean, I basically would call this, if you're going to look at you know, something and crystallize the impact of the U.S. invasion on Iraq, I would say this is the greatest, you know, singular example of the tragedy of our invasion of Iraq, if not the 30-year relationship we've had, the U.S. has had with Iraq. This was a very difficult piece to write, but just to drill down a bit, basically it talks about the impact of, like you said, the pollution, the impact of 30 years, really, of war in Iraq, beginning with the Iran and Iraq war, in which we supplied monetarily and with weapons Saddam Hussein in the Iraq war against Iran, in which thousands and thousands of pounds of munitions were dropped, tanks, if not, and chemical weapons. Then you fast forward to the Persian Gulf War, another anniversary that was reached this week, the end of the Persian Gulf War in 1991, in which, again, we used heavy artillery and tanks, notably with depleted uranium that still sits out in the deserts of Iraq. And then the more recent U.S. invasion of Iraq in the last 8 years. So the impact of that on the landscape of Iraq has been devastating, and the greatest example we have right now is the increase of birth defects in places like Fallujah, for example, and Basra, which were very, very heavily hit both in this war, specifically Fallujah, and in the Persian Gulf War in Basra. And what they're finding in a recent study that I mentioned in the piece, in Fallujah, scientists have determined a 15% incident rate of birth defects among babies born in their general hospital in 2010. And to sort of bring this into perspective, you know, an estimated 3% of every live birth in the U.S. is affected is affected by birth defects, and 6% worldwide. So we're talking a huge, auspicious number here. We're talking birth defects.
Well, hold on a second, Kelly. I was going to say, If people have, you know, young kids riding along in the back of the minivan right now, you might want to turn it to music before Kelly starts describing some of the birth defects we're talking about being found at the Fallujah General Hospital.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as a mother, this is particularly a very difficult story for me to do because every time that, you know, I went to do research, you know, Googling birth defects Fallujah, I would indiscriminately get photographs of these babies that are born, and we're talking everything from congenital heart defects to what you would call skeletal malformations, which could be pieces of the skull missing, missing eyes, missing limbs, additional limbs where there shouldn't be limbs, babies who are just lying there lifeless and limp because their heads are 3-4 times the size they should be. Things that you don't even want to see or ever hope to see that will give you nightmares at night. And there are pictures and pictures and examples upon examples on the internet that, you know, I think most of us would probably not ignore but never see unless we were investigating it ourselves. And this is sad because the evidence is there, and we have basically, like you said earlier, have decided that the war is over. But this is occurring, and they're looking for help. And their own government isn't giving them help, and we certainly aren't doing it. Now, what are the causes? This is the big investigation that's going on. There's many theories. One being the depleted uranium that I had mentioned earlier. Our depleted uranium basically is a dense heavy metal that is used both in an armor plating on our tanks, as well as in our munitions. Now, the extent of how much we've used it in this war is pretty much a secret because the military knows it's controversial. It's been controversial since the Persian Gulf War when it was used and our own soldiers were being exposed to it in friendly firefights with the tank battles. And they came home and complained of all sorts of illnesses, but also birth defects in the babies that their wives were having. There had been many studies and many surveys done, but the Department of Defense, surprise, surprise, has denied that the depleted uranium has anything to do with increased instances of cancer or birth defects among our soldiers. So you can imagine that they don't want anything to do with anything that's happening among Iraqis. But anyway, so the use of depleted uranium is controversial, but they're still using it. The Air Force uses it, the Army, the Marines. And in places like Fallujah, which had been unbelievably pounded by U.S. air power during 2004 and 2005, if you can remember, this was a big hotbed of Sunni resistance. They were the ones that hung the Blackwater contractors off the bridge, the Sunnis in Fallujah. And so the Marines went in there and basically tried to restore order there, to take it out of control of the insurgents' hands. They managed to do that. They put the security in the hands of local Fallujahans and left. And then they had to come back after George Bush. The minute George Bush was reelected in 2004, he started another air campaign. So we're basically talking about large areas of the city just leveled. We're talking about GPS-guided bombs, just like plucking buildings out, plucking insurgents out, you know, strafing going on. I mean, you know, you can imagine. Looking at pictures of Fallujah today, it's a wasteland. But they managed to, quote-unquote, pacify them in the end. But anyway, so what's left there? And we can only imagine. So the babies that are being born today are, like I said, 15% of them in 2010 were being born with these birth defects. Is it the depleted uranium? Is it the fact that there's no sewage or clean water in Fallujah? The burning of the trash on the forward operating braces. I talk about a little bit about that in the article. So we basically destroyed the ecology of Iraq. But we need to find out exactly what's causing the birth defects and also the high levels of cancer among Fallujans as well as the people in Basra, which I mentioned earlier, was also heavily hit too. The studies are there, but they need the help to bring it, not only to bring it to light and to do something about it. And we are so far ignoring the plight of these people for all obvious reasons. It is an embarrassment, a humiliation, and it is anathema to everything that we were told we went into Iraq to save and liberate these people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, now that it's the 8th anniversary of the invasion, the 7th anniversary of the first major assault on Fallujah, I thought it would be useful perhaps to contrast this quote, which comes from a piece by Tom Englehart at TomDispatch.com, but originally it comes from General Sanchez's book, and it's a description, apparently a direct quote, Sanchez, I guess, kept the record, of George Bush on the eve of that attack, and I wanted to compare and contrast this tough talk a little bit with the reality that you're describing. From General Sanchez's book, "Kick ass," Bush said, echoing Colin Powell's tough talk. "If somebody tries to stop the march to democracy, we will seek them out and kill them. We must be tougher than hell. This Vietnam stuff, this is not even close. It is a mindset. We can't send that message. It's an excuse to prepare us for withdrawal. There is a series of moments, and this is one of them. Our will is being tested, but we are resolute. We have a better way. Stay strong. Stay the course. Kill them. Be confident. Prevail. We are going to wipe them out. We are not blinking." That was the pep talk that George W. Bush gave the Marine Corps generals on the eve of that first assault on Fallujah in 2004, in the spring of 2004. According to General Sanchez, they all were just beside themselves. Like, this isn't a Yale football game, and
yeah,
they are not, you know, junior officers either. These are the head Marines in the entire Corps, and they are just standing there dumbfounded. And as George Bush is leading this cheer, he's creating a situation with these orders. This amounts to orders, Kelly, which, as you describe in your article, again, it's Poison Generation at the American Conservative Magazine. It's online at their website as well. Women are being warned to not even have babies at all,
right,
in Fallujah. They are being told, look, as a preventative measure, just do not have a family.
Right.
That's
exactly
the reality of Bush's little pep talk to the Marine Corps generals where the rubber meets the road.
Yeah. And as I mentioned in the story, I mean, there was a survey of, I think it's like 40 sites in the country that are contaminated with high levels of radiation dioxin, and Fallujah and Basra accounted for 25% of these contaminated sites. Now, I mean, with the depleted uranium, it could be anything from the dust, the heavy metal in the dust, to what's still sitting around there. I mean, there's tanks, there's equipment, there's unexploded shells. I mean, there's exploded shells. I mean, the place is a dumpster right now, and there was radioactive material everywhere that hasn't been cleaned. You have kids playing in old tanks, and, you know, you don't know what's in the water supply. And when you have a government like Maliki's government that could care less whether his own people have clean water, much less the Sunnis in Fallujah, they are being punished. They were punished back in 2004, and they're being punished now. So who knows what they're drinking, what they're eating, what they're touching. You know, we're talking women, children, people who had nothing to do with the resistance there. They're still being punished. And like you said, with George Bush and his big pep talk, you know, the Marines went in there to punish Fallujah for what they did to those contractors, to pacify them. Why should they care what's happening to them now?
There is a series of moments, and this is one of them.
Yeah. And that's our legacy.
Yeah.
Is these deformed babies.
Well, and
I defy anybody to go online and start looking this up and not be rocked to the core with what they see. If not, you're just not human.
Well, and the thing is, there's no electromagnet that can scoop all this stuff up. The usefulness of a depleted uranium round is that it's self-sharpening. Instead of going dull on impact, it actually, the lattice work of the molecules actually makes it a self-sharpening round. But what that means is, minuscule or microscopic pieces of little depleted uranium-238 dust floating around in a country that's a desert. I mean, this is never going to go away for the rest of the history of mankind. This place is going to be polluted with this uranium.
Right. And
its half-life is for the rest of humanity.
Right. I talked to one, a Navy doctor who's been studying the dust in the desert. And his theory, and this has nothing really to do with the depleted uranium, he is more concerned with the fact that when you're pummeling the earth over the course of 30 years now, you're pummeling the deserts. You're rupturing the earth. Things are coming out in that dust that should not be. Naturally occurring heavy metals. So you add that to the burning trash pits that are all over Iraq. I mean, and we're not talking little trash fires. We're talking huge pits that are burning all sorts of toxins in the air. Then you add that to the depleted uranium. Then you add that to the open sewage that Maliki is allowing. And you just got one big hellhole over there that it all comes back to us. All comes back to us.
Well, you mentioned in your article, again, it's Kelly B. Vallejos here on Anti-War Radio with us. The article is in the American Conservative Magazine. It's online at amconmag.com. It's the cover story for the April issue. Poison Generation for Iraq's Children. The War is Not Over. And you mentioned this article from last July, published last July in the International Journal of Public Health, about birth defects and sex ratio among children being born in Fallujah. And I actually interviewed on the other radio show one of the authors of that study, Dr. Christopher Busby. And he explained, because I asked him the mystery of, depleted uranium isn't, it is depleted. It's 238, not 235 that you make nuclear weapons out of. It's what's left over after you enrich to 235, basically, right? So it's not that radioactive. But then again, it is a heavy metal, so maybe it's heavy metal poisoning more than radioactive poisoning, something like that. And what he told me, Kelly, was that what he believes, and I don't know if he actually had this completely nailed down yet, but the information that he has is that the actual little particles of depleted uranium dust that lodge themselves in the cells themselves become little antenna for natural occurring radiation in the environment and basically amplify that, leading to all these cancers and leukemias and birth defects and destroyed chromosomes.
Yeah.
So it's a mix of all of those things, really. It's the radiation that comes with it, but plus it becomes and the heavy metal poison, but plus it's an antenna for even more radiation.
Yeah, and when our own military is warning its soldiers to stay away from the tanks, to stay away from the expended munitions, they're admitting that this radiation is harmful. So they're admitting to their own soldiers that this is harmful, but then they turn around and say, oh, no, this depleted uranium can't be the cause of these high levels of cancer among veterans and among these Iraqis. It's this Pentagon shuffle that we see all the time with, the Gulf War syndrome, or Agent Orange in Vietnam, the soldiers that are getting sick from the burn pits. That I just mentioned, they do this all the time. And so, it's not surprising that they're ignoring what's happened in Fallujah, but it's just a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Well, the war party says that they love the troops so much that you can't criticize the war party for coming up with the policies that the troops are made to implement, and yet then they just throw them away like garbage. I know that you've written in the American Conservative before about the burn pits, especially in Balad, and some of the cancers coming from that, and there's just no question about it. Everybody knows that the U.S. government, particularly the military, are the biggest polluters on the planet, and It looks like we're talking about the very worst kind of pollution imaginable. I mean, imagine, seriously, in your town, especially for the ladies out there, in your town, the local hospital says, look, just don't get pregnant.
Right.
Because chances are your kid, you know, could be born with two heads or one arm or one eye in the center of his forehead, as you write in this article at the American Conservative Magazine.
Yeah, exactly. And these doctors were saying that they were seeing about two incidents a day of defects, as opposed to a few every 2 weeks. You know, it gotten that bad. Can you imagine, you know, being in that hospital, or, you know, much less, I mean, being a mother, but I mean, being a doctor or a nurse in these hospitals and going, what is going on here? They're just overwhelmed with these cases. And these people are so dirt poor. How can they even take care of these children effectively? They can't. And there's a whole, you know, thing about the culture over there in terms of the shame that families feel when they have a handicapped child, much less a child that is so severely deformed. They just hide them away. It's just the saddest thing you've ever read about, Scott. It just breaks my heart. It should break everybody's heart.
Well, and that really is the point, right, is each of these kids that's born with an extra arm, something like that, that's an individual human being. And, you know, as they say in the cliche joking around, that's got to hurt really bad. That's a lot of pain. If you could quantify it, it might be a gigantic pile of pain and grief left behind by this poison.
Yeah, it's just and I think that's why the mainstream media has decided it's not going to cover this story, because you Google this up and you might get a few references to it, but on the most part, this is not a story that has gone viral, so to speak, in the United States. When that Fallujah study came out a few months ago, you barely heard a whiff of it here in the United States. It was all over the international press, of course, but it's just disgusting the way that we're just ignoring. We our media tends to ignore things that are just so hard to look at or to think about. I mean, it's and so they just ignore it. This is too hard to comprehend that we would be responsible for this. So let's just not write about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, just as we're counting down the minutes to the end of this show, we're counting down the minutes toward the unleashing of uncounted, certainly thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe millions of depleted uranium rounds on the people of Libya in order to save them from their dictator that America stopped backing 3.5 weeks ago.
Right. And you won't know about it because they won't tell you. They won't tell you how much. That's something that you're going to have to try to find out for yourself. Piece it together after the fact.
Right. Well, and, you know, that's the funny thing is people look back on the Iraq War now. They say it wasn't worth it. Two-thirds of the American people now look back on the Afghanistan War that is still being fought with 100,000 troops over there. And they say, turns out this war in Afghanistan wasn't even worth it either. And yet here we go marching on into Libya, at least from the air to start. But, of course, once they've determined that Gaddafi cannot be allowed to win, then they must make sure he loses, and on down we go, invading another Sunni Arab country, perhaps this time wrapped in a baby blue flag, but otherwise no different than under George W. Bush. And the lessons of those last two wars that we all now somehow agree we regret are still lost. And here we go again, depleted uranium rounds and all.
Yeah, because the media's not doing their job. We're trying, you know, some of us are trying, but the mainstream media, not doing their job. They never do, and this is what happens.
Well, and I have a theory, too, about why the Obama administration is trying to do this, too, is just because for the spin, for the PR, because otherwise the narrative is too obvious that these are all revolutions against American-backed dictators. And yet if they can make Libya the most important battle of all of them and put America on the side of the people against the dictator on that one, they can confuse the whole issue for the American people about who's revolting and who they're revolting against. And yet here they could get us into this major thing, at least from my point of view, simply for a wag the dog type, we prefer the news says this than that this week sort of scenario, you know?
Right.
Motivation.
And you don't want to discount, you know, Obama's fidelity to his own legacy, which I think often takes priority over everything else. And I think he strikes me as a person who is afraid that if he doesn't pull this, that he doesn't go in with guns blazing, that somehow this will be brought back upon him in the upcoming presidential election, in which he will be called weak on terror, you know, weak on our enemies, which he probably would, but he doesn't have the guts to stand up to that kind of argument.
Right. Well, and he'll be called all those things just as he is now anyway. All right, I'm sorry. We have to leave it there, Kelly. I know that you got to go, too.
Great talking with you, and thank you. I really want to get this story out there, and I think the more people that know about it and read about it and see it, we'll be as enraged as I and you are.
Absolutely. Thank you very much again for your time, everybody. That's Kelly B. Vlahos. She's a freelance reporter and also writes for antiwar.com and the American Conservative Magazine. The article, which is at the website anconmag.com, it's the cover story of next month's issue, Poison Generation for Iraq's Children, The War is Not Over. And that has been Anti-War Radio for this week. I'm sorry we couldn't get a hold of Josh Rogan, but I urge you to check out his blog at The Cable. It's called The Cable at foreignpolicy.com. And he has all the information about the plan of attack and the Obama administration's consultation with about a dozen congressmen before he goes marching your son on in there. So check that out. All the rest of the bad news at antiwar.com, radio archives at antiwar.com/radio. Thanks.